Got something on your mind? Tell Lisa all about it. 203-333-9422. It's the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. Joining us right now, our own Congressman Jim Himes from the 4th District, which encompasses most of our WICC local listening audience. Hello, Congressman. Hello and welcome.
Good morning, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So where are you? Are you at home? Or where are you today? Are you in D.C.?
I'm in Connecticut. So we were in Washington on Saturday to pass that post office bill, but I got back. I'm actually going to pop down to Washington for a couple of days of work later on this week, but then back for the Labor Day holiday.
Are you lately getting in your car? Are you doing Amtrak? What are you doing to get to D.C.?
You know, all of the above. In March, I was, when this was particularly bad in the state of Connecticut and everywhere else in the Northeast, I was driving back and forth, which is unusually easy when you don't have the traffic that we usually have. But lately I've been taking the train and the plane. And you know what? I have to say Amtrak is doing a good job about keeping their passengers separated. And so I've been both training and flying.
I want to hear about flying because I desperately miss my parents. My daughter's getting married on Sunday, Congressman, and she, my parents and my husband's parents, so the set of four who are alive and well, are not flying in from Florida because we're just, as a family, we feel it's not a good idea. And it's breaking all of our hearts, frankly. And so I need to be flying to them. So, but I haven't gotten on a plane since COVID started. Can you just tell me, can you reassure me? Am I going to be okay? What do you think about it?
Well, really? I've probably taken, since March, 7 or 8 flights myself. Some have been short, some have been longer. There's no question that getting on a plane is more risky than sitting in your room. But, you know, here's where I take some comfort. And I'm also, Lisa, really careful about giving people medical advice. You know, I mean, the CDC, of course, is the place to go, or CT.gov. But two things to say. Number one, I've been, and I'm just speaking for myself here, I've been a little more comfortable getting on planes because, you know, since March, we haven't heard or seen reported an outbreak that was traced to an airplane. There's been, you know, there was that wedding reception in Maine. There was the party in Westport, right, the party in Greenwich. We haven't heard stories of planes being a source of spread. So that's just an observation on my part. The other thing I would point out to you is I think Florida is still on the list of states that if you visit and spend more than 24 hours in, you then need to either self-quarantine when you come back to Connecticut for a period of 14 days, or, you know, you need to get a negative test. So make sure you check that out, too.
I would do that. That I would do. I'm used to doing court from my home office, and I now broadcast from my home office. That I'm comfortable doing. It's just the TSA part, the part about getting online and, you know, the strip search part on the way to the plane. That's really what I was asking about. Do you feel, I'm not medical advice, but do you feel like people are controlled in the way of their bodies not being close to each other?
Yeah, so every experience I've had, people have universally done the right thing in airports. So again, I've been in a couple of different airports, and people are wearing masks. I was on one flight where the flight attendants had to remind an individual several times that they had to wear a mask. But the airlines are being really good about enforcing a mask as long as you're on the airplane rule.
Okay.
And then TSA, you ask about TSA, they are actually wearing masks, and they're behind plexiglass now. So again, I'm not a medical professional, so I can't tell you how much protection that offers. But I can tell you that it's a different experience than it used to be in terms of people wearing masks, being spaced out, and a lot of plexiglass around.
Okay. All right. We're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes, 203-333-9422. I do have a question from Diane from Bridgeport. So earlier today, I reported, this is today's Times, Congressman Himes, that on the list of states that had already received approval for the $300 a week interim benefit of unemployment, Connecticut was not on that list. New York was, Massachusetts was, Rhode Island was. Connecticut was not on that list. Diane from Bridgeport wants to know why not, and what do you know about this?
Well, what I know is that Connecticut on, I guess, Thursday or Friday of last week applied for that program. Remember, the program is a new program, meaning when the president issued those executive orders 2 weeks ago or so, it created this $300 program to substitute for the $600 program that came to an end many weeks ago now. So I don't know if Connecticut was slower than other states to apply, but I do know that they applied, and I do know that that benefit will become available. Now, I do want to caution, it's a new program, right? It's $300 instead of $600, and so there's going to need to be some work done at the Connecticut Department of Labor to make sure that the application process is fine. My understanding is that for people who are already receiving unemployment insurance, who have self-certified that they qualify, that it shouldn't be too much of a problem. For folks that are newly unemployed, you know, they may experience the need to go online and do a whole bunch of certifications. And my understanding is, though, that like the last program, that $600 program, it'll be retroactive. So in other words, if you qualify, you'll get that $300 a week back to, as I understand it, the week of July 26th.
Okay, so just so you know, just a little bit. Time says it's August 1st, but that's all right. We'll find out. And the other piece is that the Times says, because it's coming from a different agency, it's another piece of computer software that a lot of the state's individual unemployment labor departments have to learn in order to put people on it. So it's just, you know,
yeah, that's correct. And it's a source of real concern. You know, my office has been consumed, really, certainly was in April and May and June, with helping the Department of Labor upgrade their computers and their software. It's not just learning, right? It's actual software. And so there are going to need to be some adjustments made, because you're absolutely right. This money comes from FEMA instead of from the traditional unemployment insurance program.
All right, let's go to some calls. We'll go to Chip from Fairfield. Chip, you're on the air with Congressman Jim Himes of the 4th Congressional District. Welcome to the show today. Hi.
Yes. Congressman, I have two questions for you. Do you approve of the riots and looting?
Of course I don't. Of course I don't. I would hope that no American, that no law-abiding American would approve of looting or damage to property or violence. Of course I don't. Looting and violence and rioting that is violent is wrong, regardless of who's doing it.
Okay. And my second question is, I'm glad to hear that. My second question is, we need transparency. Would all congressmen and senators put their monthly expense account online?
Yeah, well, you'll be delighted to hear that it is online. So in other words, we don't get an expense account the way business people get an expense account. The way it works in the Congress, every 2 years I get given a set amount of money, and out of that amount of money, I need to pay rent on my offices, I need to pay my staff, I need to pay for any communications we do, the IT, all the expenses of running the office. So it's not really an expense account, and obviously all of those expenses have to be government related. I can't use it to go on vacation or for any personal or campaign expenses. But that's called a member's representational allowance, and it's all public. So I'm required to file down to the penny how I spend that money that is designed to keep the operations of my office running, and that is all publicly available on, I believe it's on the House of Representatives clerk's website. So you can look it up and find out what my employees are getting paid, how much rent we're paying for our Stanford and Bridgeport offices. It's all there.
Thank you, Chip.
I'm wondering about your expense accounts for Amtrak, meals.
Thank you, Chip. I appreciate it.
Well, it's all there. Amtrak is how I get back and forth to D.C., so you can see how much we paid on Amtrak.
Right.
We don't get to charge meals. It's not like a business expense account. We don't get to charge, entertainment and that kind of stuff. But, yep, it's all there. You can look it up.
Thank you very much. Jim, we've got another caller. We're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes. We have – is it Jim from Fairfield, Andrew? Jim?
That's Mike.
Okay. Mike, pardon me, Mike from Fairfield. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Hi, Lisa. How are you? Mr. Himes, are you for the Biden-Harris ticket?
I'm supporting the Biden-Harris ticket, yes.
So you're for open borders, higher taxes, free medical for everybody, illegal aliens included?
Mike, I think you need to turn down the Fox News a little bit because there is nowhere in the Biden-Harris plan that includes open borders. I don't know anybody who is in favor of open borders.
Andrew, put down Mike's mic. Andrew, please. I don't want him to interrupt the congressman. Give the congressman a chance to listen. Mike, we're not going to do an argument on the air. You asked a question. Give the congressman a chance to explain himself. Go ahead, Congressman Hines.
Yeah, Mike, look, you can look up the Democratic platform. You can listen to Joe Biden. I don't know any Democrats that are for open borders. I don't even know what open borders really means. Now, are we against breaking up families that have gotten into the country illegally so that, you know, infants are taken from their mothers? Of course we're against that. Are we in favor of immigration that that allows our farms to operate and, quite frankly, the restaurants and the many, many industries that use immigrant labor? Of course we are. But I don't even know what open borders means because that's just not something that anybody is for. You said higher taxes. Look, here in the state of Connecticut, we are a pretty heavily taxed group of people. But what I support, remember, Donald Trump, who it sounds like you support, took the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21%. And you know how he paid to do that? He paid by getting rid of the state and local tax deduction that was a massive rate increase, a massive tax increase on the people of Connecticut. Would I raise the corporate tax rate to, say, 28%, which is where Joe Biden would raise it, in order to restore the tax breaks to the people of Connecticut? Probably. Probably would. But anyway, I do support Biden-Harris for the reasons that I outlined there.
Congressman Himes, we're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes, 203-333-9422. So let's talk a little bit about what I'm calling the missing convention, and I say that about the DNC and the RNC because I would have been at both of them, Congressman, and I loved it, and I miss it like so many other press around the country. It's a weird... It's just an unexplainable, unprecedented weirdness. Can you explain to us how you were able to feel like you were a part of this last week? Like, what happened? What was that?
Yeah, it was strange. I've been to two other conventions, Lisa, and it was strange. I'll tell you, I actually thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed being in Philadelphia, and you go here and you go there, and you have a beer, and you have coffee with this person and everything. The truth was... there's also an awful lot of time wasted at these conventions, you know, and I love the fact that the speeches could actually be pretty snappy because they weren't interrupted by, by all kinds of applause and that sort of thing. So my hope is going forward, I do want to get back to the world of in-person conventions, but I hope that maybe we can do sort of hybrids in the future, keep them a little snappier and take all the best that we saw last week. And, you know, who knows? Hopefully the Republicans will pull off a similarly good convention as we saw the Democrats do last week. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, the ratings weren't so great, unfortunately. I say unfortunately because, you know, to the extent people tune out of politics, I don't think it's good for America, R or D. But what did you think about and were you involved in the planning of having a woman, and it was a woman all four nights in a row, and an actress narrate the, that was unusual. And I liked it, by the way. It was Kerry Washington. It was Tracy Lee Ross. It was my favorite was the last
Julia
night.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, because she's so brilliantly amazing. But I thought they were all good. They were all good. The first one was the lady from Desperate Housewives. What's her name? Eva Longoria. But I thought they were all good. But who came up with that idea?
I don't know. I don't know, Lisa, but I agree with you. If you didn't have an MC, you would have had what might have felt like a series of kind of disjointed speeches without introductions. Mm-hmm. So, I heard a little bit of pushback. Julia Louis-Dreyfus in particular, she sort of did a lot of comedy. And sometimes it's hard to fold. Yeah, I did too, actually. I think, in politics, you gotta be serious, but you gotta keep it light too. But I heard a little pushback on that. But no, on balance, I really thought it was good. And without that, it would have, I think, felt a little disjointed.
So, and what about the fact that there's a little bit of pushback from the progressives? I see today in the Connecticut Mirror, the Connecticut delegates are endorsing a party platform. This is the headline that progressives decry as too conservative. Can you tell us, as an insider, can you tell us as an insider the schism between the progressives and the conservative branch of the Democratic Party? How's that playing out in issues that Mike from Fairfield was calling about before? How is that really playing out? Let's just take the one issue of defunding police. How is that playing out on that issue?
Yeah, so it's important we be clear about defund the police. You know, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, Jim Himes, no Democrats that I know believe that the police should be defunded. Lisa, we have something like 130,000, I may get my number wrong, but it's roughly right, rapes in this country a year. If you think that we're going to address that without competent and capable police forces, that's just a crazy thought. Now, the folks that say defund the police, when you talk to them, what they're usually saying is, hey, we need to pull apart police forces and we need to kind of reconfigure the way money goes to them, right? Talk to any police officer and he or she will tell you that they spend the bulk of their time working on things that never, ever require the use of force, right? So, you know, working on motor vehicle accidents on the Merritt Parkway, that sort of thing. And so it is fair to say, and you know, doing things like dealing with disorderly persons with mental health issues, that can sometimes get violent, but most often it doesn't. So look, I'll just say it flat out. The idea of defunding the police is a bad idea, right? And if defund the police means get rid of the police, that is a terrible idea. We need the police, and we need them to be competent and solid. And look, Lisa, you and I both know that the vast majority of police officers are deeply committed, very, very good people. And then you get the outliers, the Derek Chauvins, who do something so horrible that it really twisted our entire summer. And so the objective really has to be to make sure that that kind of stuff never happens again and to make sure that we, you know, do address the inequities that exist in our police forces. You know, the reality is that in our legal system, and this isn't my opinion, this is a fact, you know, who gets frisked, who gets arrested, how people get sentenced, all of those things are heavily skewed by the race of the defendant. And we should be working on that stuff. And that's totally fair. And we should be working on that stuff. But I don't think it's helpful to be, you know, frankly, handing ammunition to the other side by saying that we're for open borders or for defunding the police. That's just not what we're talking about.
We're going to go to one more call, Congressman Jim Himes. Kelly from Stamford. Kelly, thanks for holding. Welcome to the show today. Hi.
Hi, yes. I'd like to ask if they are actively going after any companies in New York City since there's a mass exodus to bring them up to Connecticut. I think it's a great opportunity. We need the jobs since corporations are looking for less office space and, you know, a beautiful state. I'd like to know if they are actively going after the companies.
Yeah, that's a great question, Kelly, and my understanding is that the answer is yes. I've talked to the governor about this. Ned Lamont is obviously very excited about taking advantage of the fact that I do think that there are a lot of corporations and businesses that are rethinking the model of having, you know, 15,000 people in two big buildings crushed together in lower Manhattan. So Governor Lamont, along with his Economic Development Commissioner, a fellow by the name of David Lehman, also from Fairfield County, I think is working really, really hard to think about whether there are, to try to attract those businesses into the county. And, of course, I hear from my, and Lisa, you probably hear this as well, I haven't actually seen data, but I hear from my real estate broker friends that there's more than a few New Yorkers who, in addition to maybe getting themselves a summer place in Connecticut, are actually thinking about moving out here. And that'll obviously have a very positive effect on our economy and our real estate values.
Yeah, that's been the one sort of bright line in the COVID thing, is that, yes, our real estate all of a sudden had a bit of an uptick. Absolutely. Thank you, Kelly. Thanks for the call. I've got one more question for you myself, Congressman Himes. I've been ranting and raving a little bit about Eversource, and not just because of the 8 days of no power, but because the scrutiny of Eversource during those 8 days of no power revealed that they are the company with the highest paid dividend of all utilities. I can't believe it passed me that they were able to acquire Aquarian Water. Do you know they're the only utility in the whole country that has both the electricity and water of the place they service, the only one in the whole country. And then when Senator Blumenthal came on and said that the top five executives, because of their stock option compensation model, had been paid a total of $40 million, I thought I was going to fall over. In my opinion, Congressman Himes, there needs to be a looking fundamentally at what the hell happened from your staid old conservatives public utility that was more like a mutual membership organization to this model and this level of, you know, incompetent service in the time of need. It's just been a series of really bad decisions over a long period of time. And I'd like to know what you think about it as a public official and what you're going to do about it and what we should be doing about it.
Yeah, great question. And, you know, I was a bunch of days without power and without information. In some ways, even worse. You know, without power is bad enough, but without information is awful. So, yeah, I'm pretty outraged by it. Now, as you probably know, as we speak, the Connecticut Regulatory Authority, PURA, is doing a hearing in Hartford
right now
on this.
Yep.
They're going to do an investigation. I actually submitted testimony to that hearing. They're going to do an investigation, and they're going to really pull apart all of the efforts or non-efforts that Eversource made. Look, we do know that they underestimated the severity of the storm, and we need to better understand that. There's two things, though, that we really need to drill into. As you point out, you know, they've been pretty generous with the money that has gone back to their shareholders and to their management team. I've been told
it's outrageous.
Sandy and Irene,
Jim, it's outrageous. It's just it's not consistent with the mission of what a public utility should be. Period. End. It's not.
Yep. Well, what I'm really interested in is I've been told for years now that they made all kinds of investments in what they call resilience and hardening after Sandy and Irene. That was a long time ago. Well, I sure didn't see it. Now, look, I'm not a technical guy, so I'm going to rely on the folks that understand the technical stuff to tell me what happened. What I can tell you, Lisa, which is also outrageous because I'm smart enough to know this, I didn't have a single mayor or a single first selectman in my congressional district who was getting good information from Eversource, right? It was days before First Selectman Marpey in Westport or Freddie Camillo in Greenwich or Joe Ganim in Bridgeport were actually getting good information about where the crews were and all of that stuff.
Awful.
And again, you don't need to be an electrical engineer to know that that is completely unacceptable. And that information is really important. So, yeah.
Yep.
We're today starts a period of really, you know, holding these companies accountable.
Yeah, and I think in addition to their feet to the fire, they're going to come to you and they're going to say we need more money for smart meters, and that's problematic because there's an argument for and against them, and I've been reading both of them, and I'm frankly not even sure which is the right call there. But I also think fundamentally this idea of a public utility being a strictly for-profit entity is at odds with what should be the mission of a public utility. They're not a competitive organization. We don't have another place to go to buy like another pair of shoes. It's not the same thing that they offer. And I personally don't think it should be structured along the lines of a regular company.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, you're right. I mean, the whole theory here is that because they're a monopoly, they subject to very severe regulation. And it may turn out that, you know, look, I think Eversource has a lot to answer for here. It may turn out that the regulatory structure needs a fix too. We'll learn that in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, this can't happen again. And again, you know, we're going to get hit with increasingly difficult storms. It seems,
yes,
you know, there's two
are.
Of them bearing down
yep.
on Louisiana right now. We need
yep.
to be better prepared.
Yep.
And at a minimum, we got to have better information and interaction out there.
Congressman Jim Himes, thanks for coming on today. Be well. Have an end of rest of great summer. Come back on anytime. Thanks for taking calls today.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Take care.
A pleasure. Congressman Jim Himes of our 4th Congressional District. I'm Lisa Wexler. We're topping out at noon. Clark Howard from noon to 2. And then Paul Pacelli from 2 to 6. And we'll be back behind the mic tomorrow.